This is the Edinburgh Reporter podcast, and this morning I'm with Daniel Johnson. Daniel, you've got
a
terrific bike with you.
Thank you for saying so.
That you've got your bike, and I've got my bike, and we're going to go for a wee cycle. We started here in the meadows.
Yep.
But first of all, maybe before we begin, maybe just tell me briefly, why did you get an electric bike this year?
So it was immediately after the election, and you know, we were doing those first few weeks, I was, you know, having to get back into the rhythm of going into Parliament again, and you know, thinking about all, you know, everything we're thinking about at the moment, wasn't terribly keen on getting the bus every single day. And you know, the bus is absolutely safe, but at the same time, if you can minimise your contact with other people at the moment, that's a good idea. Wasn't very happy with my alternative being the car, and you know, and I'd thought about getting an electric bike for a long time, but it was always a bit sort of 50-50 in terms of, you know, whether I'd use it or not. And I thought, well, actually this is maybe the prompt to it. So I ordered it early summer, and it's really about, you know, getting to and from Parliament from my house, you know, so it was basically since September, since Parliament went back, I've been using it pretty much every day.
Do you know how many miles you've done on your bike, or
about 200 on it.
That's pretty
already.
Good. So that's 200 you would have otherwise done in the car.
Yeah, perhaps. And actually, the great thing about my bike, because it's very fancy. It tells me. Actually, let me look it up. It tells me how much CO2 I've saved.
Wow.
So let me bring that up now.
Well, that's very good in the run up to COP.
So, where is it? Oh, I'll find that.
And how much fresh air you've managed to get as well. Does it tell you that?
No, it doesn't tell me that. Oh.
But that would be an interesting calculation, certainly.
I will find that, because I've definitely seen that in the app. I can't find it right now.
It's just too fancy for you, you see, it's too techy. Well, we better try this.
Yes, we better.
This pedaling thing. So we're in the meadows. And we're just going to have a wee cycle around here, but you can tell me more about what you're up to as well in Parliament or wherever. Let's go on to this cycle path here. And so what have you been up to this session so far? Because recess is almost upon us.
Well, it's been a bit of a whirlwind, and you almost always forget how much kind of parliamentary week kind of sucks you in and spits you out, and you, before you know it, you know, you get through it. But I mean, it's been very busy. I mean, taking on the finance and economy brief for Labour, I mean, I've been really focusing on jobs. So I mean right the way through the summer, I've been very concerned about, well, what does the end of the furlough scheme mean? You know, are we supporting people enough? So I mean, that's been probably my main focus. I mean, the other thing, obviously, was that the bill that I got passed earlier on in the year came into force in August. So there's been a bit of follow-up on that.
Oh, is that the one about shop workers?
Yes, exactly.
All right. Tell me about that again.
So, through the last Parliament, and it was a sort of a long haul to get it passed, I was campaigning for a change in the law to make it a specific offence to abuse or assault a shop worker. That got passed in January, that my private member's bill.
Uh-huh.
Came into force in August. And I mean, so actually one of the things that was great was just at the end of the August, going out with the police as they spoke to local shop workers and shop owners, just explaining the law. And then they were all in turn explaining to me that they had been using it, charging people. And actually, interesting enough, they were saying that very easy and straightforward for them, because it's framed in a way that's very similar to the relevant sections of the Police Act, which gives specific protections for police officers against
abuse and violence.
So that's
a real win-win, isn't it?
Yeah,
if the people that it's intended for, and also the people that who are intended to implement it, you know, like
exactly.
It, then that's been a real win-win for you. So that's been a something good you've done during your time in Parliament.
Indeed. You know, and I think I like to have tangible things that I can point to say, that, you know, I that was me, I made a difference. And you know, getting a bill passed, an act of Parliament, you know, if I do nothing else in my parliamentary career, you know, I can say I changed the law, you know, and I can point to that as a difference that I made. So yeah, I am quite pleased with that. Yeah.
That's good. And so now finance, and yes, well, people's finances are really quite badly affected, it seems, by the UK government's turnabout on. Well, 20 quid uplift on universal credit, and of course now we've got energy prices, and
it's really
a perfect storm in a way.
It's a perfect storm, and it's really complicated, and there's a lot of different things going on. You know, even if everything else was absolutely perfect, having this disruption to the way we live our lives, the way we do our shopping, was always going to make permanent effects. You know, footfall for shops is about 20, maybe 30% down. I don't think that's coming back. So with the best will in the world, you were always going to have big changes. You layer on top global supply chain shortages, Brexit, UK government decisions, and you have got an awful lot going on. And it's why I think one of the things I'm really concerned about is that, you know, people are pointing to labour shortages in some sectors, going, well, it's fine, it'll all come out in the wash. Those people losing their jobs over here will get jobs over there. And maybe I'm overly pessimistic, but I worry that it's just not that simple, and that you can actually have both job shortages and labour shortages going on at the same time. And that will have, as you say, a huge impact on household finances, and real worry and financial hardship for some people, I think.
I suppose what you've got, as well as, you know, lots of jobs available, is a lot of people who are not necessarily skilled for those jobs. I suppose that's part of the issue too.
So I think there's probably two categories of labour shortage. I think there are, some jobs where people don't have the relevant skills, but then I also think there are some jobs out there, and this is where we need to have a think about the way our economy is structured and has become structured in recent years, where I think some people just can't afford to do them. So there's lots of low-wage jobs in the economy where we've relied on essentially young people from abroad coming here to work for 2, 3, 4, 5 years and then
work
go home again.
Work in our bars or our shops or whatever.
Now that has stopped for whatever reason, but that doesn't mean that people needing to support a family can just go and do those jobs. Some of those jobs, it doesn't work.
Yeah,
the finances
don't work. They're not actually highly paid.
I mean, I've got a lot of sympathy for the need. You know, we need to think about migration and how we replace those workers. But at the same time, that's not entirely sustainable either. Mm. You know, the global population can't keep going up.
No, that's
and
true.
And so an economy that relies on us importing people from elsewhere, you know, might work for the next 10 years. It doesn't work for the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years if we're trying to actually have a sustainable way of organizing the global economy. It's just not. So, sorry, I'm getting a bit highfalutin.
But we are in the run-up to COP26,
yeah, exactly.
So we have to think about this stuff.
We really do.
Is that making you think about it?
It does. And, you know, and I think we all need to think a bit global. And it's not just about how we get to net zero, how we have a sustainable economy, how we have well-paid, high productivity jobs. We need to think about those issues for the whole world. You know, otherwise, and if we're not thinking at that level, we're not thinking about it properly.
Yeah, it's quite difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
Were you at the Labour Party conference recently?
No, I left it a wee bit too late. So I was interested in going, but only started thinking about it in the early summer. And I looked at the accommodation prices and, you know, it was pretty eye-watering.
Well,
so
yeah.
I think I'll go next year. It's in Liverpool, and I look forward to that. But it looks like it was an interesting conference.
Yeah, and of course, lots of these things, lots of these conferences and things are, you know, you can watch them online if you wish.
Yeah.
But then the impetus to do so is somehow lost if you're not there actually in person, isn't it? What about COP26 then? Are you going to be taking part in that? Is the Scottish Government going to be doing anything about that?
Well,
I know there's a festival of politics. Certainly.
There's lots of different things going on. I actually think one of the things that there may be an opportunity to do is actually engage with, you know, what other countries are thinking and saying and doing. Mm-hmm. You know, I rather think that one of the opportunities it gives us is not to tell the rest of the world about us, is actually for us to listen to the rest of the world.
Well, that would be a good thing, wouldn't it?
Well, I think so.
Yeah. But no, we've actually had to stop. We'd better admit that we've had to stop because it started to rain. You don't have a rain jacket.
I know. I was trying to.
You're trying to look like a cool man about town here.
Well, and you know, without caring about the elements, and that was clearly a mistake. I don't mind getting a wee bit wet.
A wee bit wet. Shall we carry on?
Yeah,
well,
I don't really mind either.
But I do think we have to cycle.
We have to cycle. Otherwise, this is
not going to be a cycling podcast,
no.
Is it? So. Okay, well, I'm going to let you lead the way up here because this is part of your, almost part of your
constituency. We are just outside. So okay, Melville Drive.
Let's go into your constituency.
So go up past the
old
Sick Kids.
Yeah, that would be a good place to go. And you can give me your thoughts.
Let's go do that.
So what about, hot potatoes within the constituency itself, in your Edinburgh Southern?
That's quite an interesting point. I was just talking about this with my team, and the issues have become really, really diverse. It's really hard to sort of whittle it down and say it's this thing. I mean, this time in the last parliament, sort of 4 or 5 years ago, it was very, very local. I mean, people were sort of about condition of the roads and bin collections.
You're really the council's remit anyway.
It is, but they're the things that impact people every single day. Now, I mean, I think the pandemic, being at home, there's a lot of different things. So, I mean, people are very concerned about flu vaccinations. I think that is a bit of a mess, frankly. People being asked to go out to all sorts of places who don't necessarily have access to cars.
Yeah.
That's a big concern.
We've stopped at the lights here. We're going to chant it without pressing the button.
Yeah, let me just...
Okay, we could go now. Are we going to cycle through the trees here to keep Are we going to cycle through the trees,
sure.
You think, a little way?
We are now in Edinburgh Southern, so...
Oh, good. So Melville Drive is your constituency boundary.
Yeah.
And so do you think that people's problems have changed? Then obviously people's problems must have changed because of the pandemic and everything else.
And they become a little bit more... I wonder if maybe just even people being a little bit more isolated means that their problems are a bit more diffuse. But I think they've got a broader range. I think people are also trying to just... different set of issues.
Yeah.
The other thing is then education, and that has come under quite intense pressure, and our schools are under huge pressure to adapt and cope. And I think the big question, right the way across the board, is what are the long-term impacts going to be? And some of those aren't even necessarily negative; they're just changes.
Yeah.
And I think. In education in particular, that I think that the consequence of the pandemic, because of the disruption to exams, is going to have a long impact, both on the people that have been going through school at this time, but then also I think the exams aren't going to go back to the way they used to be. So there's just going to be a long-term change in practice. And I think in some ways that's a little microcosm of so many things.
Yeah. And were you doing the homeschooling when with your own children?
Which was
interesting, I'm sure.
Quite challenging.
Yeah. Well, I think it's challenging no matter, what your circumstances are, whether you have resources to computers and iPads and all sorts or not. And,
some of it was just, I think, being cooped up.
Yes.
As a family in one place all the time. Even just that sort of little thing of not having your day broken up by going to a different place.
We are a bit of a rest.
We're so conditioned to behave in different ways in different contexts.
Yeah.
That actually when you're not going to different places, then I think it does something a bit odd with the way you behave and so on.
Yeah.
Where do you want to go now?
Well, I think we'll go up Argyle Place, shall we? And we'll have a look at the old Sick Kids.
I'd love to.
Yeah, that would be okay. I'll lead on, and I can
give a little.
I can keep up with you, you see. So
there we are.
Oh wow, I can hear your bike. It's making a lovely noise.
Yeah. So I give it a little squirt of power.
I'd like everybody to know that I am managing to keep up with you though. Where do you most like to go cycling?
Well, I mean, in terms of the way that I go into work, I actually really enjoy my cycle across Brunsfield Links and the Meadows. And it's a great commute. Uh-huh. But if I'm, you know, at the weekend, if I'm cycling with the kids, there's lots of great loops around me, you know, so going up, you know, past sort of, you know, the old city hospital, Fever Hospital.
Yeah.
There's various paths around there. You can do little loops, which, given the sort of the age of my kids, sort of they're the perfect sort of little distance to do a quick 15, 20 minute cycle ride. Goodness wow. me, we should probably explain what we're seeing.
Yeah, no, so,
the newer bit of the sick kids is completely down.
That's incredible.
So I have to say, this is actually, I should explain, this is pretty significant for me. So my eldest daughter spent the first 4 months of her life in the sick kids.
Oh, wow.
In that new bit. Partly in that new bit.
So that has lots of personal memories for you.
Lots of personal memories. It was quite hard going. It's why all the comings and goings in the new sick kids hospital, it's been quite, it's not just that the old sick kids is in the constituency. It's got a lot of personal meaning for our family. I mean, to the point where, I mean, my wife actually doesn't like coming past here because it brings too many memories.
Yeah, I'm sure it must have been an uncertain time. Do you want to go back down that way and have a look at it kind of
head
on?
That'd be good.
Just,
It's... that was a funny time.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. I can remember being in here when I was 5. I can actually remember pulling up at the front door and sitting in the passenger seat of my father's car and actually being dropped off there. Maybe we shouldn't go too near because it's a bit dusty over there. We can shelter under this tree here, Daniel.
Yeah. Goodness, so that's the whole, not just doing, so that's the old A&E completely down as well.
Yeah. It's quite startling how easy it is to pull these buildings down, isn't it?
It is.
We'll just go a little further here.
But I mean, it's funny what you were saying, and it's one of the things that, as the proposals came up, I kept saying, is, you know, it's not, Sick Kids isn't just a facility, it's actually something that has an awful lot of meaning and memory and sentiment for so many people across Edinburgh and actually the east of Scotland as well.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, happy memories and tragically sad memories too, But yes, it's been a place for lots of people with their children, certainly.
Because I've got vague memories of being taken here when I was, I think I was 4, when I broke my leg jumping off the sofa. And again, they're quite blurry memories. But actually, the memory that's really distinctive actually is when they took the cast off and bringing here, and the little circular saw that they used to kick, and it was just...
Terrifying,
which is why it's seared into my memory.
Yeah. Well, let's go on a little bit from here because it's a bit noisy. So it really is a little bit too rainy for you now. I'm a bit conscious that
I've got a rain
jacket.
Oh, no, don't worry
about
me.
Okay.
It's just a little bit of rain.
So which way now then?
I don't mind.
You know the constituency. We can
do a little loop through these roads actually.
Okay, let's do that.
Do you want to the left or right eye?
You decide.
Probably left is better because they're quieter roads.
Okay. And this was of course one of the areas where they trialled 20 miles an hour, wasn't it? Way back.
Yes. So 20 years ago, Sheen's Road here was a horrific rat run.
Yeah.
So... Yes, it was one of those, both reducing the speed limits and then the sort of not quite one-way systems, but you know, they were the priority in given directions. And now we've got, obviously, the road closed outside Sheen's Primary and a campaign to try and get that permanently turned into a play area and closed to traffic, which I think would make a big difference. But it's incredibly complicated from a legal perspective to get that change made.
And here the children are playing outside on the street.
They want us to go on the pavement.
All right. I'm being told to go on the pavement, by which is fine. You're most welcome.
Thank you.
And lots of children having a great time here.
Yeah, I don't think that would be a very good idea for me.
No, I don't think so. But they have a traffic marshal there, and they have kids playing tag here. It's terrific. A great add-on to their playground. So these streets are quite quiet in many ways then.
They are quite quiet. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think,
I'll leave the directions to you.
Yeah,
and Sheen's, of course, did one of the first bike buses.
Yes. So, I mean, again, I think, you know, Sheen's and Gillespie's being quite central schools, I mean, they've got parent bodies living close by, you know, quite a lot of them in tenement properties. So, yes, they have been good for developing things like, you know, walking buses, cycling.
They seem to be increasingly popular, which is
it's a good way, and it's sort of convenient. I think it.
I think I'd better come in behind you here, I'll go in front and let this guy past.
I think that's an example of what we need more of. I think inevitably there needs to be a bit of stick when you're getting people to think differently about how to travel, but you also, I think, ultimately need to just make it easy and more convenient.
And it's not for everybody. I think that's what we've got to realise too, that it's actually, you know, even cycling is not for everybody.
No, it's not.
But it's a good way of getting about for a lot of people, and then means fewer people in cars.
But for some people, it's just either because, you know, physically or the nature of their journey. It's just not a practical or feasible option. There is a limit, but we also, there are also a lot of other people who, either because they're not used to it or, you know, they're a bit put off by, you know, whether it's safety concerns or even, you know, frankly, the other thing is the cost.
Absolutely.
I think trying to make it all of those things easy, which, you know, I think the more you can, you know, either create or signpost people to sort of quieter, safer routes. You know, I recognise that my route across to Parliament, across the Meadows, is ideal because
it's all,
you know, it's not just segregated cycle lanes. It's
actually off-road.
Routes off-road, and that is perfect. Now, you can't do that everywhere, but the more you can do that, I think the more you take those things away. I think the more you point people to things like the Cycle to Work scheme, you know, where actually
you can buy
it
a bike.
Breaks it right down and gives you a big discount. You know, I think we will encourage people, and actually they'll realise that there's, you know, potentially it's an easier, more convenient option for them.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm glad to have had the opportunity of seeing you on your relatively new bike here this morning, Daniel.
That's great.
Your latest thoughts.
It's great fun showing it off.
It is really, isn't it? And a kind of a week of respite coming up when you get time out of Parliament and then back to it with a vengeance, I guess.
Well, indeed. And I mean, the moment we get back, there's the UK autumn statement, and then that sets us up for the Scottish budget, which will be on and I'm going to get the date wrong here, I think the 9th of December, anyway, that first week of
sometime
December.
Sometime before the end of the year.
And so that's going to be a very busy period. And it's going to be a really important budget. So I'm having to do a lot of prep work on that.
Good for you, and a nice new portfolio then to keep your interest
indeed.
In. But Daniel Johnson, MSP for Edinburgh Southern, thank you very much indeed for taking me on a wee cycle.
Well, it's been lovely to
have
a look.
About the weather.
I wish, it's making me think maybe I should do more of my meetings like this on the saddle if people are so inclined.
Well, I think you're probably going to get lots of invitations. Thank you so much.
Great.
Thank you so much for listening to the Edinburgh Report. Listen out for more episodes coming soon, and make sure you don't miss any by hitting the subscribe button now. This is one of the platforms where we can help advertise your business to our listeners. Would you like to know more about that? Then email editor@theedinburghreporter.co.uk. And remember, you can subscribe to have our monthly newspaper delivered to you direct. Sign up today on our website, www.theedinburghreporter.co.uk.